Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Dev Propulsion Labs, our podcast about the business of developer tools. Today, I'm very excited to introduce Sarah Wooders, co-founder of Letta AI. We will talk about stateful agents and all things agentic workflows. So, Sarah, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So the reason why I decided to invite Sarah to the podcast is I was at an event run by Georgian at the Datadog's office, and I saw this presentation that Sarah did about stateful agents, and I was really intrigued because we internally at Evil Martians, we talk a lot about agentic workflows and how we can implement, integrate AI for our clients, which are early stage dev tool startups. And what you showed us was really interesting to me. So can you explain to the wider audience what a stateful agent is and what brought you to Letta?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people have a lot of different definitions when they talk about agents. We kind of started saying the term or kind of coined the term stateful agents maybe about like 6 months ago, or I think we had a blog post in February. I mean, the reason we talk about stateful agents is because Letta is all about kind of building agents that can actually accumulate memory and learn over time. And the reason we got to this project was my co-founder and I, Charles, we were both PhD students at Berkeley, and we were working on this project called MemGPT. And I think MemGPT was kind of like the first stateful agent. It was essentially an agent built on top of GPT-4, where the agent could call tools, like, you know, it could like read and write to its own context, it could like read and write to a vector database, and it was essentially like instructed to like manage its own memory through like combining these tools. And I think like everyone does this now, or like I think MemGPT is like very well known now, so like these techniques seem obvious in retrospect, but at the time, like tool calling had just come out, like GPT-4 had just come out. And so it was kind of, you know, the first example of using tool calling to try to alleviate that context window limitation. And I think like both then and now, Charles and I have both really felt like basically the number one limitation with LLMs today is essentially like this context and memory problem. If you think about like what is an LLM, it's actually like, you know, they're actually extremely capable models now. Like they know more than any human might know. They're very good at coding. But they have this big limitation, which is like they can't actually remember and learn. And like there's no sense of like persistent identity. It's like every single time, like you're talking to like a brand new instance of the LLM. It's kind of like if you've seen the movie like Memento or like 50 First Dates, like if you have like a person that just forgets every single day or like forgets every 5 minutes, and then you have to like consolidate like a video or a book for them to read every time they like reawaken. That's basically what like LLMs are. And so I think with Letta and MemGPT, we were essentially working on this problem of like, how do we kind of build the system around the LLM to do this context management so that we can effectively build these stateful agents, these agents that can learn, that have persistent identity, that are available as like these services on the cloud. That's basically like all the things that we're building into Letta.
What do you find is the most common scenario that people are using agents for, like your clients? What is the main application for agents?
You know, a very simple one is honestly like even just like chatbots. Like you want your agent or like maybe some like virtual personal assistant that you've built to have the ability to take actions, but then to also receive feedback and to also like learn things about you over time. Like I don't want to have to keep on telling my like AI agent like over and over again my preferences, like who I am, like, you know, all these things that I've already said to it before. But I think there are some more like interesting use cases that have come up. I think like deep research is actually one that we've seen a lot of, where I think deep research, you wouldn't necessarily think like, oh, memory matters there. But what we've actually started to see is that in like a lot of these like long horizon tasks, like for example, like deep research, it can run for like 15, 20 minutes, right? The LLM is being called like over and over and over again. And one really big challenge with these like long horizon agents is that they often like lose track of what they're doing. Like they like start out with like, oh, I'm going to research this thing. But then like 5 minutes later, it's kind of like forgotten what I was doing. So this actually comes back to the memory problem, because it's essentially a problem of the agent kind of forgetting what it's doing in the middle of the task. And so if you build deep research agents on top of Letta, we actually kind of provide the scaffolding for the agent to actually write into its context, like essentially it's like plan of action, and then actually like, you know, check off each of those action items as it goes And we found that that actually really helps with the agent kind of keeping track of where it is in the process, stuff like that, and actually avoid like derailing in the long run. Another one that was kind of, you know, a pretty interesting one that we're very excited about is like, we also have built rewards, like the credit card, pay rent with a credit card company is actually one of our biggest customers. And for them, they're actually using agents to kind of like learn about their users over time. So, you know, as a user of Built, you have all these transactions, you have these interactions, and it's very like unstructured data, but you can essentially use these like stateful agents or these like memory agents to kind of learn and derive insights to essentially learn like this user profile that's useful for like recommendations and also like informing other parts of their platform.
Walk me through what a day in a founder who is building NSF, who is building AI tooling, who is building a seed startup, what's your days looking like these days?
I don't know if my day is very interesting because I wake up, I go to the office, I work, and then I go home. I guess in terms of like what I'm doing in those hours, I mean, I do still code. I think a lot of our kind of heavier lifting, like system stuff, has been taken on by like more senior engineers on our team, but I do still do some coding here and there. I take a lot of customer calls, like talk to our users, especially a lot of cloud, like, you know, understanding pain points people are hitting with that. And then also, of course, like working with our existing customers, making sure their like deployments are successful. So yeah, it's definitely like a lot of like communication, also like recruiting, stuff like that, and much less like research and coding than it once was.
So you actually had another startup a few years ago, right? And you went to YC. And how is your experience building in 2025 different from that experience? Do you find that there is a lot of pressure from the AI boom, or it's actually something that you're able to navigate with ease?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now, in my opinion, is a much better time to be building a startup than it was back in 2020. With my very first startup, the idea, it was called like Listen AI. And the idea with it was essentially like using like fine-tuning computer vision and NLP models to become really good at like taxonomizing e-commerce data. So for example, if you ever go on a website like DoorDash or something and you like filter by the cuisine type or filter by these other things, at the time and probably largely still to this day, like a lot of that categorization is done completely manually. So we were essentially trying to fine-tune models to kind of be really good at that task, like curating data sets, stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, that was also when like COVID was happening. So that was like a whole mess. And I also think like back, you know, right now, there's just so much energy and so much value that's being created by these like new models. The amount of like value that's just being created and that you can capture is like so, so much more. And I think like, because we have this like foundation of these really powerful LLMs, like the things that you can do and the pace that you can move is so much faster. I mean, obviously there's just like, you can literally code faster because of all these like coding models. But also if you're trying to build something like an agentic system or an AI system, you don't have to like spend all this time like manually curating data sets and like fine tuning something to your specific use case. Instead, like the challenges are actually largely around prompt optimization, which is a relatively like faster thing to iterate on. And then also because the models are so good and so general, the space of things that you can do and the value that you can create is just much, much greater. So I think relatively speaking, like right now is a much more exciting and in some ways easier time, I think, to be building an AI.
Are there any lessons that you've taken from going through YC to building this startup? Anything stuck with you over time?
Yeah, I mean, I think YC is definitely very like educational. It's kind of like, I mean, it is truly like an accelerator. I think the things that really got emphasized in YC is just like constantly be selling, constantly be pushing your product. I do think things have kind of changed a bit since then in the sense that like, I think a lot of the like outbound has gotten a lot harder. I remember when I was in YC, like, you know, you were supposed to send out like hundreds of emails and like, you know, even if you had really low response rates, like rely on that as a funnel versus I think with Letta, like both because the company and the project is a bit better known. And then also we have more of like a PLG motion through the open source. We actually haven't really relied on that as like a funnel for customers. It's primarily been inbound. I think especially as a technical founder, it can be kind of tempting to like want to, you know, really perfect the product or like solve these like technical problems. But really remembering like in YC, like just how much they like push you to like constantly sell.
Interesting. Let's talk about the open source part of this. So a lot of the times now when I meet founders, open source is almost like a non-negotiable. Like it's something that you do partly for marketing, but also to improve adoption, right? Because people get to use your product for free and already benefit from this. And especially considering the AI fatigue that's happening everywhere, you know, it's very hard to get people to pay for the product that they need to try, you know? So for you, was it ever a conversation or it was kind of like a non-negotiable as well, where you just decided to open source it and went for it? Or maybe it's something that your investors pushed for. What was that journey in your experience?
Yeah, well, I guess with Letta, like it was open source from the get-go, because when we made the very first version of MemGPT, like that was in large part, like it was a research project, right? So it was very natural that it was open source. I think like since then, like obviously once we graduated and started the company, we could have made like a closed source fork of it. But I don't think it's really like worth it. I think what with Letta, what we really sell is like, we offer like a way to have like open state management or open context management, because I do think it's inevitable that eventually, like, you know, GPT-6 or like whatever, like new models or new APIs that are offered by the, you know, big AI labs, they'll eventually become stateful. They'll eventually like, you know, do server side tool execution, do memory management, have like a lot of like hidden magic behind the scenes. But I think with Letta, like a big part of our mission is like doing that agentic orchestration in like an open way, and also allowing developers to have as much control as possible over their context window, being able to actually see what tokens are going in and out of the LLMs, like having control of their data and state. So I think like that's kind of like one of our value propositions, and also something that we value as a company. And so open source kind of plays well with that, because, you know, people can see exactly how their data is being stored, how the context window is being compiled, things like that. You know, of course, as a company, it's also important to have like some things for like commercialization. So I think we do have some closed parts of our software, but that's primarily things like the UI, like the infrastructure for hosting, because I don't think like that stuff like need, or I don't, there's not really any like benefit to that being open source. Like you can always like build your own UI if you want to. That just kind of helps us commercialize Letta without kind of having to rely on hiding things or making things opaque to developers.
So you mentioned that there is this PLG motion and you get adoption through the open source. What are some other pieces to this puzzle? Are there any marketing channels that work particularly well for you apart from those two?
We do still like publish like a lot of like blog posts, you know, again, because like we want to be like open and transparent about the way that we design our agents, the way that we manage context. We do like, you know, publish like blog posts about like how we evaluate things, how we architect our agents, you know, the kind of the techniques behind Letta. So that's definitely like one marketing channel, just like, you know, sharing like blogs and content about like how Letta is built, like how we approach things, and then also like things about like how we see the space. We had like this like agent stack blog post that I think, yeah, like was probably like our like biggest hit in terms of just like pure like marketing material. But also, like, I think some of our research work, like, we were the number one terminal bench open source implementation. So we wrote, like, a post about that. We also had some other research work called, like, Recovery Bench, which was essentially, like, evaluating, like, how well do different models recover if they kind of, like, mess up at some point. I think, like, you know, sharing stuff around the research that we do and, like, the agent design work that we do is also, like, a big part of our marketing.
Is it difficult for you as a technical founder to have to, you know, be the face of your product also? Like going to podcasts and presenting at meetups, or is it something that you actually enjoy doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think I enjoy doing it. Yeah, it's definitely like, I guess, like tiring if you do like a ton of it. But, you know, I'm always very excited to talk about Letta. Yeah, I do definitely code a lot less than I used to.
So some other questions that I want to ask is, basically, rumor has it that investors are expecting exponential growth. Now, considering that you have access to all of those like big models and, you know, speed is kind of like they expect a 10x engineer, things like that. Do you feel that pressure because you chose the VC route? Do you feel that pressure on you to show some crazy numbers, or is it a more sustainable flow that is manageable?
Leta is in many ways like an infrastructure company. Like, you know, we're essentially trying to build like the agent cloud or like the stateful agents cloud. So you can essentially, you know, create your like perpetual agents that learn and evolve on top of Leta cloud. So I think there's definitely a lot of like technical challenges with making that happen. But at the same time, like we also like, you know, want to get customers and get usage like earlier on to drive that feedback. So I think for us right now, like we focus a lot on making our current customers successful, you know, really ensuring that people that do adopt Leta, like get a lot of value from it, derive a lot of value. So they themselves can kind of show that like 10x growth from like adopting these AI products that they build on top of Leta. So I think that's like the main thing that we focus on right now.
Do you have any advice for someone who is about to build a new startup, like considering the hype and the AI fatigue that I mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why there's AI fatigue, but I do also think that like optimism is pretty justified because I mean, there's just like so much like new stuff coming out and like the models are, I mean, they're not like getting like crazy better, but they are still becoming like a lot more reliable, a lot better at tool calling, a lot better at like agentic tasks. So I feel like we are still like, you know, just at the beginning of seeing like where these things are going to take us. And so I think there's like a lot of opportunity, even though, you know, it does feel like everyone is working on it or everyone's talking about it. Yeah, I mean, in terms of advice, like, yeah, I do think like working in the AI space, there's a ton of opportunity. So I definitely wouldn't like discourage people from that. I think this is more just like general advice rather than like AI specific. But I do think like finding the right like co-founder and like finding the initial team is definitely, in my opinion, the most important thing. Any company is going to have to reinvent themselves at some point or like, you know, pivot their product or like drastically change their product or like positioning, you know, whether it's at the beginning of the company or like later on. But then the team is always the same, right? So I think like getting that right in the beginning is the most important thing.
What's your biggest motivation in building Leta?
I think with Leta, like we do have this goal of like building these agents that can actually like learn, right? Which I think we really see as like the biggest unlock for, you know, whatever you want to call like the next version of AGI, ASI, whatever. Because yeah, I do really think like the models are so good at this point. And so if you can really just build the system that enables them to learn and improve and become much more like this like coworker that you work with and they understand you better over time, they understand your work better over time, I think like that will really like unlock like a new level or like new tier of AI applications. And so I think like that's like very, very exciting and motivating to me. I think a lot of the stuff that we've seen from AI so far has been useful, but it's kind of been, you know, a little like less autonomous. Like it's been things that are more like maybe like LLM driven workflows. I think coding is the main area so far. Like probably coding and deep research are like the two like real agents that exist right now. But I think we're going to see like a lot more of those, like just a lot more of these autonomous agents that can run, that can learn, that like work over long periods of time to do useful things. And yeah, I think there's going to be like a ton of value that gets derived from those agents. And it's very exciting for me to be able to work on providing that foundation that will allow developers and companies in general to like build these types of agents.
So outside of the Bay Area, I feel like there is a lot of skepticism towards AI, you know, because here we're kind of like in the bubble where it's all very exciting. We see how companies are kind of on the edge, creating some like new categories, basically. And I'm not sure if people outside of the Bay Area feel as much. How do you feel like their life will begin to change, let's say in a year, in 5 years with those new applications? Where do you think it will start? And this whole debate about like jobs being depleted, you know, because of AI, what's your stance on that?
Basically, I would imagine that in the future, like, you know, right now, the only people using something like Claude Code or like these agents to actually help them with work is primarily developers. And it's primarily developers in the Bay Area. So it's a very small part of the market, right? But I think eventually, like, everyone's going to have, like, it's not going to be called Claude Code, but it's going to be like some equivalent of that. Maybe it's like a specialized equivalent. Maybe it's like a general purpose equivalent, but essentially like this like agent that like works alongside them, right? So I think the experience that developers have right now with Claude Code is like an experience that like everyone will have, like if they're doing like any kind of like knowledge work or like white collar work. I think like that will be something that changes the way that like everyone, at least everyone who adopts that, how all those people work and like how they'll be productive. That's why I think there's still like a lot of value that's still we're like only just beginning to see, just because of like how, like you said, like the adoption right now is like still very, very narrow.
Let's talk about the team for a second. You mentioned that team is something that stays with you no matter what position, you know, what basically value proposition you choose. What are some qualities that you look for in people that join your team?
Obviously, like we, you know, people who are really, really smart, really like adaptive, good at what they do. I'm sure like everyone says that, but yeah, I mean, I think other than the obvious things, like we also do look for people who are like really like low ego. I think like a startup is inherently like very collaborative, right? Or like the value that you create as a startup is kind of like shared across the company. It's not like kind of any individual's glory. So I do think people who are, yeah, low ego, like easy to work with is also like something that we definitely look for. And then, yeah, also I think people who want to work hard. I think like the AI space is obviously like moving so fast that I don't think you just have to have like a certain intensity of work, even just like keep up. So that's also something that we kind of try to make clear to people joining the team that, you know, it's not going to be like other spaces, like especially AI agents is probably like one of the fastest moving spaces in the economy or in general. So yeah, like making sure that people understand that what comes with that.
And you mentioned that your co-founder Charles and you were at university together. That's where mm-hmm. you met, right?
Yeah.
How mm-hmm. did you decide to build something together? Was it like a complementary stack of skills or what happened? How did you guys start building?
I think when GPT-4 happened, like everyone's lives kind of changed in grad school, or like everyone started like reconsidering, like, what am I doing? Like, what should I even be working on? Because it was just such a like groundbreaking moment. And yeah, Charles and I actually had pretty different research areas. So I was more on the system side. I worked with like Jan Stoica. I worked on, you know, projects around like building like cloud data systems, like intercloud data transfer, like some AI systems, versus Charles was more on the RL side. Like he did like, you know, I think some robotic stuff, like primarily in like reinforcement learning. So we actually had like pretty different research backgrounds. Like we're publishing in different types of conference venues, but I think when Charles started working on MemGPT, I was very interested in this because I was like, I think for me personally, I actually don't really enjoy training models. I think that's kind of why I ended up becoming like a systems person, because I mean, model training is just like very like, it's like a lot of like data curation. Like maybe there's like an art to it that I don't understand, but I was never really into that. But I felt like after GPT-4, it became a lot more about like building systems on top of the models. And that was something that was really exciting to me because I like building systems. And MemGPT was very much like a system built on top of the model. Like I think in the paper, we called it like a operating system for LLMs because it's like you give the LLM these different tools, you like execute the tools, you provide the LLM with like, you know, virtual memory. And so I think I was really interested in that project from like that kind of like systems angle for LLMs versus like Charles was obviously more interested in it from like the RL, like learning perspective. So yeah, that was kind of how we started working on MemGPT together. And yeah, I think with Charles, like I really respected like how like determined he was with like, you know, making things work, like the vision that he had for like these agents that can self-improve and learn. And yeah, we also just like worked really well together. So, you know, it felt like it made sense to, or like he seemed like a good co-founder. And then I think too, like it also felt like the right, I think timing is very important for a startup, and it felt like the right time because when we were starting the company about a year ago, I think agent frameworks wasn't really even like a category. Like there were like multi-agent frameworks, there was like LangChain, LangGraph. But at the time we were like, you know, all these people working on model serving, because there are a lot of people around us working on model serving, like people like VLLM, SGLang, they were out of our lab, or like Ray Serve Together was like growing a lot at the time. And we were like, well, all these developers are interacting with like these stateless models, but in the future, they're going to interact with like stateful agents. Like it's going to go from like LLM or model serving to agent serving. And so we wanted to like build the company that was going to be that. I think like that has also kind of definitely panned out in the past year. Like a lot of APIs are moving towards like a more stateful model. So yeah, that was kind of like how it happened. Like the timing and like the team and all that kind of aligned.
Do you feel like your business has benefited from being in SF and getting to work like in the office together?
Yeah, I mean, we're like big believers in in-person work. I personally really dislike remote work. So our team is fully in person and based in SF. I mean, I think when you're in person, you can just move much, much faster. You don't have, there are ways to do remote work. And obviously there's companies that are successful with remote work, but I think they do it by like, you know, you write everything down and like you over communicate things. And there's like just a lot of like overhead. But I think when you're in person, like you can just like immediately chat, like the latency like gets driven to zero in collaboration. So I think like that's, you know, just helps us move a lot faster and also just makes it like a lot more fun. Like I like working in person a lot more. I think it's much easier to be energized and, you know, kind of last a long time in difficult conditions when you're kind of working in person with a team together. So yeah, I think that has definitely helped us a lot.
What is your biggest challenge in building Lada? What's the most difficult part?
I think what we're trying to build is definitely like difficult. And so there's a lot of like technical challenges that we face, and we are like a small team. I think when we had our initial set of customers like going to production, it was definitely a challenge to keep everything online, like make sure you don't have downtime. And so we put a lot of work into making sure that like we have like proper monitoring and that we like can provide like our customers like the reliability that they need. So I think like working on both those like sort of more like software infrastructure problems and like AI problems simultaneously is definitely like a difficult thing to balance as a small team, especially when the space is moving so fast. So yeah, I would probably say that.
So for Lada, are you targeting enterprise customers? And if yes, what do you feel is the biggest? I mean, because you touched on reliability, I feel like those are like the big things that they pay attention to, security, reliability. Do you feel like the future is near? Like we're near the point where enterprises will be widely adopting agentic workflows, or you feel like it's still, like we still have a lot of work to do on that front?
Yeah, I personally feel like it's going to still take a bit more time. There's a lot of people going around right now who are like, oh, agents are happening, or like people have already made agents. Like you probably have already interacted with an agent as like an average consumer. And like, I feel like the reason people say that is just because they rebranded something that already kind of existed to be an agent. Workflows have existed for a very long time, right? Like these workflow companies or workflow engines, they've already existed. And I think people just added like LLMs into them and then called them an agent. And that obviously like adopting that is much less friction because enterprises already have enterprise workflows. And so if you add a LLM into them, now you have like an enterprise agentic workflow. But I think that's inherently still very, very different of a workload or like technology than something that's like an agent in the more traditional sense, like an agent that has identity, that can like work autonomously, that learns. And I think like that technology stack is going to look very different from like the workflow stack. It's like, I mean, like an example that I can give here is like, imagine if you were trying to implement like Claude code on top of like a workflow engine, like it would like maybe possible, but like it just like doesn't make any sense, right? Like those are two very, very different things. And I think they've kind of gotten like conflated because people have rebranded workflows to be agents or to be called agents. But I think like, you know, what I would consider like real agents or like stateful agents are a very different thing from workflows. And like, there's not a lot of overlap there. So I do think on the enterprise side, obviously there's been a lot of adoption already with on the workflow side and like integrating LLMs into that. So I think that'll continue. I think for like actually autonomous agents, there's of course like a lot of challenges with like reliability and like integrations and even just the technology of enabling that. So I think what we'll see is probably, you know, companies that are maybe more on the forefront of things of on the technology, adopting a lot of those things first, and maybe the bigger enterprises taking some time and having like a bit of lag before they also adopt that technology.
What do you think is the best way to approach an enterprise, let's say in the current state? What I mean by that is we have a lot of customers who are early stage startups, developer tools, AI tools, and they want to move up the market, right? They want to approach enterprise. And enterprise is very hesitant to bring in AI, but at the same time, they have dedicated budgets for AI, you know, because that's is just like AI is coming, right? And they have to integrate AI somehow. And now we kind of like have to piece those two pieces together and create some sort of proposal that de-risks this engagement, you know? So in your experience, what has been the best tactic to do so? I don't know, maybe it's as obvious as open source, you know, maybe there are some more insights that you've got to share.
It's obviously best if you can have like a champion inside of the company who's already familiar with your technology. Maybe they've used it on a personal basis or they've explored it personally and they're willing to really champion you. I think that helps a lot. Also having your solution kind of be having like awareness around it gives kind of more security around that. I do also think with like enterprises, there is like a bit of a danger with this whole like, you know, they've like allocated like budget to AI for this year. Because I think if you're a startup, like you want to focus on solving a problem, right? Like you want to make sure that your product can come in and like provide business value. Because even if you can close that like first year contract with that, that allocated budget, in the long term, if you want to continue to have like this customer, this enterprise as a customer and continue to like grow your revenue with them, you just can't get around the fact that you have to provide some kind of business value. And you can't provide business value unless they have some kind of problem that they can solve or some new product that they can build using your solution. So I think for us, like we try to focus on people like that, as opposed to, there's obviously like a lot of companies out there who are just kind of like, oh, like we want to build agents, but we don't know for what. I think those types of customers can actually, they can be quite difficult to work with because they have like, you know, a huge list of all the different features that they want you to add. But then you're like, well, why do you want this feature? And they're like, well, you know, like the other frameworks have it. But then you can't really tie any of those features back into any business value because like they don't have like a business case to drive the integration or like the adoption in the first place. So I think we as a company, like we try to focus more again on like not necessarily people who are buying AI for the sake of AI, but people who are actually trying to build like, you know, the stateful agents or like use the capabilities that we're providing.
What do you find is the biggest gap in the AI tooling still? Like what are some missing parts to the workflow that you've noticed?
I think MCP is something that I'm so happy that MCP came out because before MCP, it was literally such a problem for us because we want to just focus on like agents and making agents work well, right? But a lot of frameworks actually provide a ton of like built-in tools, just like various integrations. And that wasn't what we wanted to focus on as a company. So we really were looking for solutions where for like pre-built tools or like tool integrations so that we wouldn't have to build that out. But then MCP happened, which was great because it basically introduced this protocol where any client like ourselves, Cursor, Claude, all those clients can just in the same way like integrate with the MCP server provided by like, you know, Zapier or like Supabase or whatever. So that was really awesome. And, you know, we're really excited about MCP and all the power it provides. But I think there's still like a lot of work that needs to be done. Like there's a ton of differences in like the different ways that people implement the protocol. I feel like auth hasn't really been figured out. There's like a big lack of standardization. Yeah, I think the whole ecosystem's like super early. And I wish it was more stable because we want to enable customers to like deploy production agents using MCP in production. But I think there's a lot of barriers to that, like which is like how do you authenticate like per user? Or like how do you I think a lot of MCP servers are also like very flaky. So like they just fail sometimes. And that obviously like, you know, damages the end user experience. So I think that is something that I would personally love to see move forward a bit more. And then I think closer to, in terms of the stuff that we work on, like, I mean, I've already said this, but just I think having your agents be able to have automated context or agentic context management to essentially like enable these things like learning and personalization and evolution over time is you know, also something that's going to give a big lift in terms of what applications are possible.
Sounds great. Thank you for your insights. Typically, I end my interviews with one question, which is called a warm fuzzy question. And it sounds like this. What makes you feel great about what you're doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in terms of like things that give me daily fulfillment, like, I mean, there's a couple of things. I think like one is obviously just like people seeing like what people build with Leta, like seeing the community, having people be like, kind of be able to see like, oh, like my stateful agent is able to like do all these things that like other agents can't. I think like that's of course like very fulfilling. I also think it's just, it's really cool to be working on like the forefront of such a new space. I do really feel like right now is kind of like our version of like the early internet era. So there's just so much like low hanging fruit. I remember like pre-LLM, like I would like read stories about like, or like, you know, read about like Bell Labs or like people inventing this or that with the internet. And it's like, oh my God, that's like so obvious, right? Like I wish I could have been there back in the day when like all these like super obvious ideas were just like lying around for you to pick up. I feel like with AI, like this is like our version of that, where like there's just like so much opportunity, like everything is so undefined. There's like a ton of like white space. So I think I'm very excited and happy to be able to like work in a time like this.
That sounds great. I mean, I share your views on that. So it does feel all very exciting to me.
Yeah.
Sarah, now is the time for you to invite our audience to try Letta. Can you guide us as to how we can find it and how we can use it?
You can just go to letta.com, letta.com. And we have both an open source project. So if you want to self-deploy Letta, you can use that. But then we also have a beta of Letta Cloud. So if you go to Letta Cloud, which is just that app.letta.com, you can create an API key to essentially use Letta through the TypeScript to our Python SDKs. Or you can also go into our agent development environment, which is our UI for building and observing agents, and also create agents there.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. Thank you for catching yet another episode of Dev Propulsion Labs. We at Evil Martians transform growth stage startups into unicorns, build developer tools, and create open source products. If your developer tool needs help with product design, development, or SRE, visit evilmartians.com/devtools. See you in the next.